You're listening to an FX PhD podcast from fxphd.com.
Hey, and welcome to this week's FX PhD. I'm John Montgomery, joined as always by Mike Seymour.
Mike. And I am, in fact, the last Cylon. How are you, John?
I am fantastic. It's a beautiful day in Chicago. You know how, well, you would know how, what it's like. But on those early spring and summer days when it just reminds you how wonderful the weather can actually be, you can't help but be in a good mood on a day like this.
So I'm here looking out the window wondering if the sun has come up or not, not being able to tell because it's so gray either way.
Oh, well, I guess,
No, go right ahead, dude.
Try my months and months of gray weather. It really is interesting, the change of seasons and the impact that it has on your psyche. I just
it's like those seasons like change constantly.
I know not of these seasons you speak of. Anyway, it's so how are things?
Good. Very good.
It sounds like a very high quality Skype connection today. Mike and I were just commenting before we started recording. I think that I'm not even going to say it, but compared to our past issues with Skype, things are sounding quite well nowadays.
Yeah, right up until they don't.
Yes. That's why I struggled to say that. So it's been fun. Today I did battle with doing a recording, and I just continually, you know, I'm learning about the space and so forth and where sound is bad and good and yada yada. But I had to stop like four times from the two fire trucks parked right across the street with their sirens on full, to the crying, unhappy baby of one of the editors who's working here. They had to actually pick up their child at daycare because they were sick, and so brought them here. So I could not get my voicing done for Victor's synthize course today until just recently. So I'm learning these things here. I don't have a door on my office yet.
Poor baby.
Yeah, I mean, I can't complain, right? I mean, I don't mean to be, complain about that. It's not the baby's fault. In fact, they're at that age where they're just like, you know, they obviously don't know what's going wrong with their body, and they're just really upset, and it's saddening. But anyway, hopefully I'll have a door to my office at some point, and things will be good. So that's my excitement today. I've had a couple of lattes,
too. In Sydney, we have an open door policy. We don't lock ourselves away and kind of, you know. And I'm wondering if that isn't really a true reflection of American foreign policy in the Middle East. No, I'm just joking. It's right. Come on.
Hey, I've been.
Sorry.
I've been to your office. So anyway, but no, things are good. Had a good weekend. Did yet another upgrade on the FX PhD family of servers this weekend in order to boost our bandwidth just a bit more because 8.6 terabytes is not enough. So
now that would be eight. What are you referring to? What's the number mean?
The 8.6 terabytes of data transferred in the FX PhD, and it does actually include FX Guide. Family of servers.
So that's how much 8.6 terabytes downloaded?
Both ways, but the vast majority of it is downloads, of course, from members, whether a PhD, downloading high-res files, or just even torrenting. We do torrenting, but even that's just distributed in large part amongst our servers. So yeah, quite a phenomenal amount of bandwidth, especially considering where we started out, I guess. So basically what we had to do is add another server over the weekend, did some security updates, and boosted that just so we could buy some more bandwidth. It's a nice problem to have, though. Lots of people enjoying downloading. And I've got to say, I've been a little less concerned, policing about the size of downloads, just because it's good to get higher quality images out there when we can. But
that's a lot, though, isn't it?
Wow. That's a tremendous amount of footage. So it caught us. It's all good. So we did those upgrades. You may have noticed the torrents were missing for a while this weekend and so forth, but that's why. But all is good now, and we should be set for at least another 3 months, maybe?
Another week.
Yes, another week. So I think you made a good point in the forums, though, about that. That's actually one of the brilliant things about the Red format, isn't it? You're getting these. You're getting these incredibly. I mean, even the red files that we have sent out have been quite large. But if you think about what you're ending up with in end resolution, and color depth and everything and dynamic range, is quite astounding what we're getting from those files.
Well, compared to the thought of actually getting 4K off the net, full stop. Right.
Yeah. Yeah, well, in the forums, one of the things we mistakenly sent out some, or not mistakenly, we just didn't additionally send file, but we sent out some DVC Pro HD, you know, 720p footage, right? And so the goal, some of that was green screen. And so what we wanted to do is send out uncompressed TIFFs of those. And so you're sending out, like, how many frames? I can't even think, like, you know, several hundred frames, right? Yeah. I mean, it's not a huge amount, right? But you end up getting like 700 megabytes, of which compared to what you could get from an R3D file is just astounding what you're getting in resolution.
Oh, yeah, totally.
So.
Well, yeah, no, I couldn't agree more.
Yeah, it's interesting. So it'll be interesting, especially moving forward, if you start thinking about it, what other kind of distribution can be done using file in this formats in this way. Of course, the end result, the end issue is, of course, the decoding time for really high quality images takes a large amount of time. But, you know, processors are going to catch up over time, I think. So quite interesting. Quite interesting, I think.
Yeah, but slightly inside baseball. But I mean, the fact of the matter is that, you know, it's there's a lot of things that come into play with people asking us questions about stuff, and quite often, you know, I think it's useful to understand a bit of why we do some of the things the way we do them, because, like, you know, I had people say, well it's an arbitrary length how long you make the classes. When you make them, like, you know, an hour or 2 hours if necessary, well, yeah, or we could, like, you know, not go bankrupt.
Yes, so true. But yeah, that was, again, some of the posts came up just asking questions about that. But that's all good, and that's all set to go. And again, we're just trying to keep ahead of the curve and making sure that we can continue to distribute that kind of footage to you guys. So that's been good. Hey, by the way, I just also want to give you public props. I really enjoyed the last Red Center podcast.
Oh, yeah?
Talk about uber geekiness.
Yeah,
I mean, I loved the rest of it, but I really enjoyed the conversation with Graham Natras.
I was drinking my latte. Sorry. It wasn't a dramatic pause.
It really was. It was fascinating. I went back, actually listened to it twice, because, you know, I was out doing some stuff in the yard listening to it when I was mowing yesterday. And I'm like, I'm going to rewind that and listen to that again just to make sure I got it. But really fascinating discussion. If you guys haven't checked that out, you definitely need to check out that podcast.
Yeah, on my Twitter feed, we had this huge discussion about how technical it was. And my point was that, and I sort of say this somewhat facetiously, right? But I don't like talking down to an audience, as you know, I mean, neither of us do. But I guess the other thing is, where else do you go for that stuff, you know? Like, if we don't, I understand we will lose a bunch of listeners who go, oh my God, this is just too complicated, and, you know, go running with their hands over their ears. But we don't. We're not trying to appeal to a mass crowd. Like, the point of FX PhD, the point of FX Guide is to service the industry professional, not to service, you know, the, I don't know, iMovie crowd. And I mean, there's nothing wrong with the iMovie crowd, right? It's just that I want to be, as a professional, somewhere I can go that I can get the absolute, you know, dirt on the technical stuff. And I don't think we need to get into the, you know, C++ algorithms, but I think we need to understand what's going on.
Well, especially as we've talked about in the past, just because the amount of misinformation that is out there, it's really important to be clear and present the real information, I think. So that was fascinating. And, you know, when you have an opportunity to sit down with Graham Natras, it's good to take advantage of that time, in my thinking. So I, of course, was there with you and then had to bail out and get back over to prep for the masterclass. So it was really interesting hearing that conversation, because that was done at the Friday before NAB, I think, right at the opening, one of the opening sessions there.
And, you know, really, we really appreciate Red's support, because they had a media blackout prior to the launch on the Monday. Mm-hmm. And Graham doesn't do those sorts of interviews, full stop. And because, you know, he's not a press guy, he's a developer. I mean, he's the CTO kind of thing. And but they were like, in our case, they made an exception because of PhD, right? I mean, because Graham is in our forums and sees the level of discussion, and he's like, yep, that's a professional group, I'll happily talk to them.
And that's also the great thing about Red and other companies like it, to be able to not be too afraid to let us have access to that. I mean, obviously we're gonna have great relationship with them as well, but it's great that they just allow that too, right? I mean, some companies, can't even get close to those people. So it always has to be someone who you hear from all the time. And just to get that kind of insightful stuff, that's, again, as you point out, that's what I think is great about FX Guide and FX PhD. So big fun.
Big fun.
Big fun. So did you see the thing about the exams in the update? Did you happen to watch that? No, you didn't.
No. I didn't get the update.
We can't all watch the update. Well, that was, yeah, so...
Your video update? I'm sorry.
Yeah, the video update.
Yeah.
Yeah, the video update thingy that I was talking about. I sent Mike an email, and he's like, what update? I'm like, oh, yeah, I guess I should be a little clearer in my mind. Yeah, it was just interesting. We started talking a little bit about the exams. The reason it's kind of on my mind is I spent today working on that. But kind of an interesting discussion in the forums about, you know, whether they're needed and why they're needed and so forth. And one of the things I brought up about the exams, and I think, Mike, you hit the nail on the head a while ago about this as well, is that sometimes it's just nice to feel as though you got something for completing a course. You know, you worked hard on it. Did you learn the stuff? Maybe it's just nice to even get some feedback. It's like, well, maybe I missed some stuff that the professor thought was important, because they obviously included that in the test. But hell, I mean, even if you don't need it for an employer, it's explicitly required from employer. I just kind of like getting something when I'm done.
Yeah, sense of achievement. I'm completely in agreement with you, John. I think the sense of achievement is the one of the things that we'd like to build more of, and I'd like to, you know, see a much more sort of structured reward system for, and I'm not talking about like giving away stuff, I'm not talking about making money stuff, I'm just talking about personal reward, right? You know, I'd have been really ticked when I did my master's if they'd said at the end, well, we're not going to bother actually giving you your certificate because, you know, what does it really mean? You know, it's just a piece of paper. I'd have been like, give me the degree.
That's actually a good point. Have you had to show that master's when you've applied for a visual effects job?
Well, never, of course.
Yeah.
And quite often I deny I even have it just because it's too geeky. But the point was, personally, felt really satisfied getting it. So,
yeah.
No, I couldn't agree with you more.
Yeah, that's interesting. And at the same time, I will say, while I've never, I posted in the forums as well, that while I've never actually explicitly asked someone for that from someone's resume, if I see that on someone's resume from a known quality source, then that's just kind of a quality clue. In my thinking, when you're interviewing, you know, you might not use that as the factor that you're going to hire someone. You know, you're going to look at their reel, you're going to look at their work. But I just think all those little things add up to present yourself professionally when you're getting a job or you're looking for a job.
Totally.
So
couldn't agree more.
Basically just want to explain some of the reasons that we're doing it. And as I post in the forums, in the end, it comes down to, hey, you know what? We've gotten a lot of requests from it. I think we get a lot of requests even before people join PhD asking, hey, before I join, do you have some kind of testing or exam or certificate? So the fact is that there are people out there who want it, so we're going to give it a shot. And you know what? If no one does anything with it, okay, so be it.
I will do something with it. I will sit exams, courses that I'm not giving. I will proudly go out and say, I am a certified FX PhD Jedi Master. I have reached Zen levels. You know, but like everything from karate to whatever, video games, right? Like there's an idea of levels and there's an idea of earning the right to get to the next level. And I mean, I'd love to see a whole lot of things. I'd love to see a point where if you really do become super proficient and hit up like Zen point, you know, it changes your little thing at the side of you in the forums and say that, you know, you've reached that level and, you know, it's like a, do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
like
totally.
You just display that you've achieved that level. You know, I am a level four. I'm a level four golem.
I am a level four golem. Yes, fantastic. Let's see. What else is going on? Oh, hey, the code is working. I know a couple of you tried to purchase the grading suite from the online store at the end of last week, and I got an email that he actually fixed that code. So the code that we posted and will be posting again, I'm just about ready to send out the weekly email. That has it's the same code if you had it before, but it is now working. There's a little bug in the e-commerce site of his grading suite, whatever, store. So got in touch with him, got it fixed, and so you should be good to go. So
excellent.
Excellent. Excellent. Glad to see that.
Yeah, so I had an interesting time. I interviewed one of the guys from NAB whose lecture I didn't get to, who was behind the site. I thought the name of the site was. It's let me just look it up. You got to fill for a second while I get this. But it was
something related to some kind of online marketing or some online website.
It's the web stuff.
We were really busy at NAB, and I'm actually going to post. I've got it half written. I was going to continue to promise that, and definitely have it half written about what kind of what we were doing behind the scenes at NAB when we were there, just to give some people an idea. We said we were busy, but just to give people a clue as to why we were busy.
Do you think, I think everyone would know why we're busy, wouldn't they?
Yeah. I mean, you know, we can just, but you can just say you're busy. It doesn't make you busy. Yes. Of course, I guess in the same line, I could just make up stuff and post in the blog as to what we were doing during the time. I don't know. I think it was kind of interesting. It's kind of fun to actually go back and look at that stuff and kind of see actually what we were doing. Because it definitely feels exhausting when you're in the midst of it.
I thought we'd kind of, I thought we'd kind of, I guess with the Twittering and stuff, I felt like, you know, people were sick of hearing what we were doing in NAB.
Yeah.
Okay. So thank you, Michael Seymour, for taking so long to find that. Philip Hodges is who I was talking to, who was with the Digital Production Buzz. So Philip is now president of Intelligent Assistance, and he gave a podcast talk at NAB called Making a Living Off Your Podcasting, which I'm kind of interested in, not because it's PhD, not because it's FX Guide, it's because that was what we do. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. It's like a personal interest. And I was wondering where to stick that. I just wanted to talk to him. I missed his lecture, though I heard things about it. So I got him on the phone and had a chat to him. And I thought I might stick it in the Dean's blog because, I don't know, there's something about – there's a bunch of stuff that's kind of interest to me at the moment about how new media is working out. I don't want to do a whole thing on podcasting. I'm certainly not going to do courses on podcasting or whatever. But there is some interesting business aspects to the production of online stuff. And obviously most of our stuff's not focused at online. So I was thinking, what do you reckon? Does the
QuickTakes is a perfect place for that.
You think on FX Guide? But I was just worried that would be the wrong kind of vibe because FX Guide's so VFX focused. So for example, and somebody else I spoke to, I mean, you're thinking to yourself, why does Mike do this? It's like, you know what? I got to say, and this is probably relevant. I don't know. Maybe it's not, but hey, what the hell? I find I need to allow myself time in a week to explore what I might call professional rat holes. Like I need time to explore things because that's how I learn and it sort of goes into my general. And so I get little in things that I'm interested. So, for example, one of the things I was interested in is complicated stuff with R4 FL files, right? Mm-hmm. And so I go on a whole little rat hole about those and, you know, learning about Apple's floating point standard for QuickTime and stuff, and then suddenly discover, oh, that feeds back into stuff that's going on with Red, and then that'll end up in a Red class. But you know what I mean? Like, I need time to professionally explore crap. I'm sure you're the same, John.
Oh yeah, I was just going to say that rat hole that you're speaking of is kind of my life, but we each have our own rat holes and perspective on that. But yeah, you're something's true. I just actually find it intellectually stimulating to see what people are doing right and what I think they're doing wrong, and so forth. It's, you know, and again, it's just, we are in this internet media business from our standpoint in a way, just because of the content that we're doing on FX Guide and FX PhD, the podcast, and FX Guide TV, excuse me. And obviously our market is very targeted, and which is, I think, actually one of the good things about the new online medium. I think that's the best part about it, is that you don't have to, you know, worry about the means of distribution. You don't have to set up this giant, giant infrastructure, and you can be very targeted.
But I guess there's a certain, I think I'm right using this expression correctly, inside baseball aspect to it, right? Because it's like, you know, discussing our business. But that's why I thought it would go well in the Dean's blog.
Yeah, but then all the people have that. I mean, people who are experiencing that, whether they're visual effects artists or something else, they're generally probably preparing medium for such. A lot of them are kind of in the same boat as we are. And technologically, it all comes back full circle to, you know, it's the content. You know,
I guess there are a couple of other things that pinged my attention. And one of the ones was the impressive nature of the visual presentation at the Autodesk users group. The actual presentation of the lecture, if you like, that we discussed in the podcast on FX Guide. And so I did some digging on that and got to speak to the guys that actually did it and worked out how they use Keynote. And for me, it was the first time I ever saw PowerPoint or Keynote used in a way that I went, wow, that's like slick production value that if I had to make that in Flame would take me forever, and I couldn't pull it off in Flame because it wouldn't trigger on, you know, button presses to roll to the next bit to time with what was happening on the stage. and it was so professional. I mean, so much above what you'd call a PowerPoint presentation, which to me, you know, is death on a stick.
Yep.
That I thought, I want to find out about that. And there's that, there's the thing with Philip. And then, did you, I don't know if you ever saw this, there was a, David Byrne from Talking Heads did a whole thing on PowerPoint and managed to get a really amazing creative thing out of PowerPoint. And it was quite extraordinary that he did that, right? Because, you know, he's not a PowerPoint guy. But, I mean, that PowerPoint presentation was even featured in Wired magazine, right?
Yeah, at the same time, though, it's similar to anything else. It's a tool, you know, and it comes down to the artist doing it. It's not the tool. I mean...
Yeah, no, totally. But this is my sort of point, right, is that, that some of these tools, some of these areas that I don't have in my little tick box under professional are getting grabbed by people and used in an incredibly professional way. And I think that's of interest. I'm not quite sure where it's of interest. I feel a bit like I should do – I don't want to do another website for crying out loud. But, you know, like Jeff has his personal blog where he kind of puts things of interest, which are more perhaps obtuse and margarita-related than what I'm talking about. But, you know what I mean? Like some of these areas that are on the fringe of what we do, like the, yeah, the dramatic improvement in the animation capabilities of Keynote, the – monetization of websites. And then there are other things like there was a funny video that I pinged you about, John, yep, which was Revision 3. And if you haven't seen this, it's a very funny video of them doing an in excess lip sync. And so that is just totally in its own right funny. Good, you know, I like it. I think it's well done. I was also fascinated, of course, because you get to look around Revision 3 studio because the camera does all these 360s around their workspace and their fixed sets. And, of course, being in a company that has fixed sets doing production for the internet, although we do it for training and they do it for TV shows, it was just fascinating to sort of like peer over someone's shoulder and kind of get a walk around their place.
Especially how big it was and their gear mm-hmm. that they had in the set, you know. It's just like
but that brings me back then to... Oh, yeah, that's my point. Yeah, that brings me back to venture capital funding and a way of – and I'm not picking on Revision 3. I think Revision 3 are great. But my point is that the business models and some of the business aspects of that internet venture, because it all does fold into effectively post-production if you think about it, because, you know, the shooting bit on there in their case is a trivial aspect of it. And but I said I do not want to be – running off at a tangent and doing courses on, you know, podcasting and how to blah, blah, blah. But I do think there are some interesting business implications for companies that are getting into dealing with material that isn't destined for, you know, a 30-second on-spot ad or a feature film. In other words, you could be doing some serious production work for something like that. Keynote presentation was done in After Effects and stuff. And but that's an interesting new target. I guess it's always been there, but it didn't strike me as having the kind of power that we're seeing now.
Yeah. I think the especially though, and probably has been there in the broadcast design category of things, I guess, I would imagine. If you take a look at a lot of design, think about the, you know, what about trade show stuff too? Just that entire huge market of stuff that people have to generate and do. I remember doing bids and doing projects in the past that were very similar to that. And it's just like you find these little niches and it's like, wow, there's some really amazing stuff that's being done.
I found some amazing stuff in architectural visualization. We did one story a little while ago on the Chicago Spire, and that led to another one, which is I've been working on this story now for months, and we're just in a holding pattern waiting for the official release so that we can run it from a completely different design company. They're just doing astounding work in the field and really, really good stuff. But it's, you know, it's hardcore visual effects in the sense that it's just as valid as anything that would be in a 30-second spot. I'm just torn a bit between – I'm just being honest. I'm torn a bit between these areas that are at the fringe of what we do, you know, discussing them, which I think is of kind of interest. But by the same time, I don't want to dilute what we're doing by going off message.
Yeah, I think it's all related to the same stuff. I mean, good motion graphics design is good motion graphics design, whether it's on broadcast film or at the Autodesk users group meeting, you know, especially when you have that interest of kind of plugging it in with technology, which I think a lot of artists, you know, like us are quite frankly interested in, you know, we're kind of we kind of enjoy that kind of stuff. Same thing as you're talking about with visual effects, where the visual effects are done for films at a really high budget, or they're done for ArcVis. It's good quality work, you know? I find it fascinating, whatever the distribution model is, right?
Yeah. I mean, I get you. I mean, you're right. You're right. It's the design and the communication skills, and, you know, there's like a combination of advanced communication skills and advanced technical prowess to be able to pull it off, I guess.
And then on top of that, you have, as you mentioned, some of the technology stuff catching up, right? You're talking about the ability to do some of these things that maybe you weren't able to as an individual in the past, you know, putting, you know, software, affordable software in the hands of people who might be able to use it. I mean, granted, you may end up with a lot more crap out there. You know, the early days of desktop publishing and clip art, which actually probably still goes on today, right? But again, you get this idea of getting the production in the hands of the people who can do it, you know?
Well, so, you know what? You know what the company was? You know what the host company was doing that Gary Tanica set up in the back room of to write Flame, as it was then called Flash? That little office was doing coordinated slideshow presentations for, you know, presentations. Like, it was like the cutting edge of computerized control of slide projectors. And then he set up out the back room to write Flame, right?
Right.
And so, yeah, I mean, it's always been there. You're right. I guess I'm always nervous about, you know, I really like what we do, but I just am really, really nervous about being either actually or perceived to be moving away from our base and diluting stuff and, you know, not remaining focused. Because I think you're absolutely right. One of the biggest benefits the PhD has is that it remains focused on serious practicing industry professionals in our area of post-production and visual effects.
I think the key is kind of what we're talking about here is framing it, right? And positioning it as to why it's interesting and explaining why, you know, not just going off on the tangent of saying, hey, you know, this is great. Isn't it really cool? But if you take a look at it, at the root effort of it, what people are doing, it's incredibly applicable to what we're doing. So
you reckon that'll be quick takes, or you reckon it'll be...
I like the quick takes, actually, because that's where more people are to view. Because I think, again, positioning it, it's why is there red stuff on FX Guide?
Well,
because it's really cool, but and it's really fascinating. But it's really fascinating.
But it does lead to an entire new workflow.
It does, right? I mean, that's and people are kidding themselves if they're going to hide their head in the sand and say this doesn't apply to me.
We don't tend to cover, you know, the latest focus pulling device because it doesn't lead to post production, right?
Right. Yeah,
I mean, I get some really cool stuff in the red world that I never cover because it's just literally like, you know, attachments and add-ons to things that is just completely cameras and nothing to do with.
I was so explaining that here the other day about walking through those extra rooms at NAB and just loving it. But anyway,
people were like, if you see anything really cool, expecting me to say, well, the Nuke, which, you know, was the, you know, the Nuke 3D stereoscopic stuff. And I was like, well, there's this Jube arm that I'm really lusting after. But yes.
Anyway.
Hey, we did something really funny the other day that's coming out in a class. I shouldn't break
gag.
But,
oh, come on.
But we did this thing with Ben Allen, right? So this is related because you posted something in, I think, your Twitter about lights.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah? Okay, so what happens is we get a Ben. So I want to set up to make me, which is a stunningly hard exercise, make me look good, right, for a, you know, interview, like as if it's for a DVD making of, right? So he lights me with Kino Flows, with scrims on them, in this huge space that we've got here on the Tech Penthouse. There's like a big, you know, open area with lots of room to move. He's got assistants. I give him like 3/4 of an hour to light it. It's it's like me sitting in a couch. It's kind of a close up shot on the red camera on a jib arm with, you know, like little spots at the back and cute little Dino type things.
Oh, sweet.
Yeah. Okay. And we go, so and literally, I mean, I'm spoiling it. I'm sorry if you're in the, you know, DOP class. But anyway, so I go, So this would be pretty typical, right, of like everything that, you know, you normally do, right? Like you've got lots of room to move, you've got a crew, it's nice and relaxed, it's quiet, no phones ringing, no interruptions, no restrictions. You know, you've got like meters around me in every direction, right? You could position me anywhere in this huge space. So there's this huge amounts of fall off behind for getting the background out of focus. And Ben would say, yep, never. And we said, yep, that's what we thought. And then we got him to move into the smallest cramp. You know, the red room at PhD?
Yeah.
Yeah, the red room full of gear. Yeah, yeah, seriously. And then said, right, now, redo it here for real, where there's a restriction on height, the phones ring occasionally, and I guess what? We're taking away the Kino flows. You're only allowed to use hard lights, no scrim, no diffusion.
Go. Nice. Oh. And that's going to be a keeper. Oh, I'm going to.
It was really good, right? Cause, and you know what? Bastard, he's so talented, right? The bastard just makes you look really good in the second. And I was like, there's no way he's going to pull this off because there was so much clutter in the room. It was, you know, there was huge amounts of light coming in from massive lights on one side, these windows, sorry.
Right.
But there were different color temperature, the light from there, from the fluoros, which we, you know, in the PhD main offices, the production offices, we have replaced all the fluoros with daylight colored fluoros, right? So we never have this problem. Not up there, man. That was like the production it's got horrible colored fluoros. He couldn't, there was like three tables in there. You couldn't swing a cat. Plus we had our other camera filming him doing it. Plus he had no assistance. Plus he had to do it all in 15 minutes.
Wow. That'll be fun.
But we just decided that was the real world, right? You get sent out to interview somebody and then you go, that's what happened to us. You know, it's like you got 15 minutes to set up and then the talent's coming in and then we're out of here and you have to make it look good, right? And I sorry, go on.
No, I was just going to say, and if you happen to have an open space, it's probably freezing cold in a giant open space that you have to shoot in. I'm referencing, of course, Dortmund, Germany. where we shot in a silo that was used for water storage back in the old train. What was it?
In the
Second World War. And literally, yeah. We're shaking, you know, from the cold by the end of the interview. But it turned out to be, you know, on camera, really cool looking. But anyway, it was either that or, as you say, the cramped quarters down below. So you went for the open, cool looking backdrop.
Well, I guess the thing was that, yeah, and we didn't have proper lights, but I just hate to break this to you, but the way he made me look in this class versus how we made us look in that class.
Don't even.
We were like, you know, okay, ready for my mugshot.
Yes, exactly.
I was like, can I get a still of that to use as my passport? You know, that was like, I'm going to give that photo of me to my mum. You know, because he just, it's so well lit. And of course, he, you know, balances key and fill and backlight and he manages to do all the things. And of course, we didn't let him even use the red camera, right? We ripped away the expensive camera and gave him an HDV camera. So he literally went from, you know, the wanky, I consider it the wanky, you know, making of, this is how to light somebody, to the real world, right? So he like took away everything that he had that would, you know, even like to the phones and people coming and going and the FedEx guy arriving. And, you know, it was just perfect for its miserableness, if that makes sense.
Oh, fantastic. And that's coming out this week, huh? Or sometime? Sometime
soon. I think it is. It's either this week or next. I'm gonna pause for a second because we've also did one on, I think it's this week. Hang on a second, I'll ask. Hey, Matt, is DOP coming out this week? Excuse me, everybody, for doing this. DOP
this
in
is
the
a
red room.
Behind
is that
behind the
week?
Scenes.
It is. Matt is just nodding. He's got headphones on. He's editing it right this second. Does it look good, Matt? Amazing. Matt says it looks good. Do I look good, Matt? Amazing. I look amazing. There you go.
Amazing.
I look amazing.
Fabulous. At least you didn't say you looked fabulous.
Fabulous. I look fabulous. I'm so fierce. Anyway, no, but I think that's really interesting, right? Like, I like doing that. I like doing kind of real world, right? Like,
yeah.
And I couldn't think of any other way to torture Ben to do this, right? You know what I mean?
Like, yeah, it was a great idea. It'll be fun. I could use that. I'll be using that now.
Yeah, no, really, it's astounding. And, you know, that I think people actually respond to that stuff in the forums.
Oh, totally.
I mean, I know when we added the whole idea of having a production thread to PhD that it was slightly controversial, like, you know, how's that going to work? But I've got to tell you, like, in terms of 3D and stuff, I actually love knowing the real lighting stuff. In terms of 3D and how to approach a scene from an artificial lighting scene, a sense, it's great to have a practical lighting background. That makes sense.
Yeah, it does. And in any extent, I think it also just helps to have any kind of knowledge you have related to on set and filming. As you say, anything, the more you can know about it, I think the better served you're going to be in the long run in your job. I mean, I guess there are certain instances where you could be stuck in a room and it would never matter. But for my thinking, it's just like I've never personally really been hurt that much by having more knowledge.
And you know what? I look around the net and there are a lot of people doing video podcasts right now and the lighting is appalling. And we've proven with Ben, right, that having some cheap, harsh, hard lights, so no scrim, no bloody Kino flows, no, these are like run hot globes on the end of small rods that just, you know, are quite, when he first put it up, I was like blinded. I mean, he said that would blind me, but you know what I mean? Like,
yep.
Looks magnificent. And so clearly there's a gap there between what you can pull off and what people are pulling off because, you know, I really think there's a gap there in the understanding of how key lighting is. And we had a discussion on one of the podcasts that I was on, I think it was over on TWIM, where somebody asked, why is it that the HD podcast looks so crap compared to, say, an HD program that we've shot in HD by, you know, a network like a, I don't know what you want to think. Like, I think the example they used was Grey's Anatomy or something, right? Mm-hmm. And universally, the rest of us, including myself, went, the lighting. It wasn't about the camera. It wasn't about the tech. It wasn't about, you know, even the lenses. It was about the lighting. It's the lighting that that just really says production values.
Oh, it is. And it's actually really awkward. Have you noticed when you're watching episodic television when they do some major change in style in lighting something? Have you ever noticed that? Did you watch 30 Rock?
I do watch 30 Rock, and you know what?
Not only that,
I was going to say that you get a style. I can, you know, you can watch a snippet of a show with no characters that are lead cast members, yep. And you can almost name the show from the lighting style, or the camera work, yeah, which I think is astounding.
That's the CSI is a really good example of some of the way that they deal with the blues and yellows. But 30 Rock, when they came back after the strike, I think these are all new eps that they've had on the last couple of weeks. Very different from what they had before.
And I remember when they... Sorry, go on.
No, I was just thinking maybe it was only this season and not just after the gap, but there seems to be... It just feels much different to me. There's always this kind of reddish reflection in Tina Fey's glasses now. Like there's a reddish glint in her glasses. They're doing some different, very different things than what they were doing in the past. So,
quite. I remember on West Wing, they changed it around season 6 or 7.
Oh,
they
went darker.
they went dramatically darker. And oh my God, it was. I found it actually quite off-putting initially. It took me a long time to. Not that I wasn't into the show. I was like, loved the show to death, right? But just from a technical point of view, I was just studying the sight of frame. I was looking up. I was trying to work out lighting designs. I mean, I completely came out of the show and spent it. Now, they did some magnificent stuff. I mean, some really, really good work. But I understand the budget on that show got to around or was around $6 million an ep, right? So we're talking like mini feature film per episode.
I thought that was interesting, though, stylistically, if you look at the creative on that series, that in, I think the reason it was so different is it kind of detracted from a little bit because it seemed so polished. Do you get what I'm saying? Because like before, yep. Especially if you yep. look at the pilot, it was just run and gun. You're just following people around in this real environment. And then they switched up, and for all intents and purposes, it was a much nicer look. You know, if you were to look at the images and the imagery that was filmed, nicer. But for some reason, it took it to a different place versus feeling like this real world thing that we were following and eavesdropping on. It became much more drama-based. So interesting stuff, though. But again, that's the kind of stuff that I think that it all adds up to our craft, right?
Well, no, there's one other point I want to make on that because it's actually related to PhD, that the other thing that show did exceptionally well, that ER does exceptionally well, is move the camera, right? Mm-hmm. And actually, when you see somebody highlight for you, because it's often you don't notice that camera move. I remember somebody like a DOP pointing to a shot, and they walked in and somebody had on a video of Eddie Murphy from what was that thing that he did that was really popular, the Hollywood Cop one? What was the, you know,
Beverly Hills?
There you go, Beverly Hills Cop. Okay, so somebody was trying to find a scene from that to use as a steel-o-matic for a pitch. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. okay, so they had it on their screen, and a DOP was talking to me, and he said, oh, I love this shot. Look at the camera work. And there's a shot as two characters are walking through a warehouse. Third character is in the scene, and at the beginning of the shot, and it's Eddie Murphy, he's out of camera. And the camera is moving as if it's the POV of Eddie Murphy, right? Mm-hmm. So we're now moving down the – walking down the warehouse. Two characters are talking to each other. The POV is Eddie Murphy. We know that there are bad guys down the end with guns. So the POV shot establishes a certain tension, because suddenly as POV, you are worried about the gunman. It's like an emotional thing that suddenly happened. But here's the trick. Halfway through the shot, Eddie Murphy comes into shot from camera right, really close to camera, and the camera style changes in an instant to a more fluid movement, less POV, because it's no longer Eddie Murphy. It's now, we're seeing Eddie Murphy, right? Same shot, never cut. And I had watched that scene, never even noticed this, right? And it was a brilliant piece of camera work. It established tension at the beginning, but then Eddie Murphy needed to come into shot to actually, you know, be ambushed. And so the camera work just went from slightly wobblier to completely smooth and moved around in the same shot. And he was like, oh, I just love that camera work. And I was like, I had never noticed that.
Yeah.
And right. I got that in ER and in West Wing. And that, the reason I'm bringing this up is that that's some of the stuff we're covering later in the DOP course, which is camera movement. We're going to actually use a mini Steadicam. We've got a Jibba. We're going to do a bunch of stuff to show, you know, advanced moving of the camera. So that's kind of interesting, I think.
Yeah, it is. It is.
But again, that gets to that same thing about, you know, CG. And if you – have you seen Iron Man yet?
No, I haven't.
So Iron Man is better than you think it would be, and it's made like $200 million in the first, you know, 30 seconds that it's opened. And if you're going to, by the way, don't do what I do, which is stay to watch all of the end credits of the visual effects artists and then leave during audio credits, because apparently there's a extra bonus scene at the end after the final credits. Always watch for VFX credits. Unfortunately, left during audio because you know what I'm like, a bit VFX biased. Anyway, so in that film, there's a shot of Iron Man shooting up into, you know, effectively the lower atmosphere. And what I noticed about it was that it had gone for a style of camera work, because this must be a completely CG shot, right? Like right. The guy's a rocket at this point. There's just Atmos and some distant – there's nothing in this shot that's real. But the camera work has a Battlestar Galactica feel of not quite being able to keep up with him in shot, and the zoom isn't quite right. Do you know what I mean? Like it's an imperfect piece of camera work, as if a cameraman was trying to film a rocket flying up and couldn't quite pan fast enough and couldn't quite zoom fast enough, which gave it an immediacy, which, you know, is exactly what they were doing in Battlestar Galactica. In fact, they do it, you know, much, much more sort of obviously, or much in a more obvious style on Battlestar Galactica. But it's filming CG with a virtual camera that really has the feel of a physical camera. If you look at the trailer for Wall-E, Pixar one, the last shot, there's a whole bunch of shopping carts that come flying down after Wall-E, and he slams into a wall and they all hit him behind him. Same thing. They've got a problem with focus on that shot. It literally doesn't get its focus right and then readjusts late on the move. And, of course, it adds a tremendous authenticity to – but both cases, this is a completely CG shot. And, you know, that's actually real craft in visual effects, I think, to get that humanity into the camera.
That's so true. We've talked about that even a lot, and even camera position plays into that in visual effects shots. You know, I know we've talked about it in the past in certain scenes and certain shots that don't look right because the camera is just in an impossible position. And it's a trend that's really common, but that's the same kind of thing. That movement, the movement thing is a really great thing just because it lends it to being a non-electronic camera. But even camera position does the same thing. It's like the camera is not, you're not going to have any object that's ever going to be close to a 747 flying through the air in Air Force One. You know, you're not going to have a camera, the plane's not going to pass within inches of your camera. So
same thing came up in DV Rebel course in, you know, redoing the DV Rebel course with Matt, who's doing a great job, by the way, I think. And for those of you that didn't get the flag, John arbitrarily decided last week to just give everybody the DV Rebel course if you've done it before, so, which I think is a nice thing. And everyone seems to appreciate that. So that was good, John. But in the DV Rebel course, that was a joke. You're meant to laugh. I don't know why you didn't laugh.
What's that? Sorry.
I thought I've offended him. No. I made a joke that you'd arbitrarily decided
I thought you were
that.
Being nice. Oh.
No, okay. I was being nice, but I was also joking that you'd just done it without talking to me, which doesn't matter. Anyway, I just don't want people thinking I was being snipey because I wasn't. I was just joking.
I didn't
anyway,
think that.
In DB Rebel, there was this thing that Stu writes about watching, you know, the shot in Die Hard where he's in the ejector seat and he comes right up to camera screaming and there's an explosion behind him and then he falls away in the,
yeah.
Do you know the
oh,
shot?
Yeah.
The
yeah.
Shot? Yeah. So Stu himself, when he's a junior, is dubbing a reel in the tape room of that shot of someone's showreel. When someone behind him says, "What do you think of that shot?" And Stu, not looking around, not knowing who it is, goes, "Must be really hard to get a shot like that that's never going to work because you'd never get a camera there." And it was, in fact, the DOP. It was his showreel. And he was like, oh, no, the visual effects supervisor, sorry, of Die Hard. And he said, "Good answer, son." Because it's true. Like, it was really hard to make that shot work because there's no way you're going to get a camera 2 inches off the nose of a guy who's going to fly up from an explosion in an ejector chair. You know, it was just always going to be contrived.
Yes. But it's the signature shot of that film in some ways.
Yeah, but I remember at the time not liking it.
No, I know.
Joking aside, you know, if you can just relax from the last humorous. Okay. Well, we've lost it. All right.
No, that's anyway, actually true. No, it's true, though. But it's like that scene. You know what every mean? Time like, you see that friggin' film, anytime that scene is, every time anything from that film is shown, it's that scene. And it just like, yeah. I'm like, hello.
But it was always going to feel awkward because
yeah,
it was always
totally.
Feel contrived, right?
Yep.
But anyway. Have a look at the Wally trailer for the last shot of the trailer where the shopping carts are coming after him. And try,
that's a good example
it's
of it.
Such a good bloody trailer. I can't wait to see that film. God, I love Pixar. That would be like the only thing I could think of that would want me to leave PhD is if I got a phone call from Lasseter and then I'd be like, John, I'm sorry.
I'm so out of here.
I'm out of here, man. But apart from that, I'm never leaving.
Hopefully my response would be, what? Me too.
Yeah. We'd be missing this press release.
I didn't want to call you. I was afraid.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I'm sorry. I'm down with a terrible cough. I'm going to be out for the next 2 years.
Exactly. Sean, you're never in the forums anymore.
Yeah, what happened, man? Speaking of the forums, have you actually? I haven't looked lately. Are you still lagging behind me in posting?
Oh God, let me check.
No, I'm checking. No, okay. You check. No, I'll check. No, you check.
Check.
Because not like we're like you know, childish or anything about this. Hey, yeah, tell
you
somebody.
If
I want to give
by
a shout
we
out to-
you mean you. What?
We mean me. I tell you somebody else we give a shout out to. Michael Movies, that's his, you know, thing. He's been doing some great posts in the our forums.
Yeah.
Really good stuff.
Really well thought out, really considered posts. We like that.
Oh, yeah. Okay, here we go. So, John Montgomery, I finally found something you've posted. It took a while. And you're at 2,600. Okay, let's see something that Mike Seymour might have posted. No, I think I would be in something like, I don't know, background fundamentals. That would be somewhere where I would post. Let's go down there. Now, what was your number again?
2,600.
600.
Exactly? Or are you rounding off?
No, I was to the post. You're 2,600. Woo-hoo. Well, yeah. I mean, you know, knock yourself out. Except for the fact, drum roll, please. Hello?
Yes.
I didn't hear a drum roll.
Oh.
2,649.
2,649. He has 2,649, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank you. So I think you should, you know, get off your ass and...
Behind the scenes, you know...
No, that's all right. There are a few numbers
he knows that...
This one annoys you the most.
Yes. I'm happy with my 2,900 emails and support helping people out, so...
Yeah.
I'm like, you know...
Oh, and
I'm comfortable with
say,
my posting
like we've
volume.
Mentioned this before, but if somebody emails, I mean, I find really bad. There are really great contributors to PhD that occasionally email with, "Could you just advise on the entire workflow of X?" And I just have to apologize. We just don't actually have enough free time with the number of members and the size of it is to give huge amounts of personal attention to individuals, and. And I know we could build a business model that would be the case, and we'd charge about, you know, $2,600 a term for membership. So it's just the nature of the beast that we just really can't give you tons of personal.
Well, it's like I don't have enough brain cycles to fully devote to the kind of answers that we think we should be giving. That's at least my feeling about it.
It sounds like you're an airline terminal. That just like the, you know, paging, you know, it was almost like a doctor's thing.
Really?
Paging doctor. Yep.
Well, it might be time to leave.
Is it time to go? Okay.
Oh, you heard a page in the background?
Is that what it was?
Oh, probably someone paging. Yeah, now that I actually have, we're in a working place, I guess that's true. We could have people paging people in the background. So I thought you meant my voice sounded like it was paging someone. But
no, your voice always sounds like you're... No, I mean, you've got the best voice for radio. Like, we all, you know... Not worthy. I mean, your radio voice, your presentation. I heard myself for one of the podcasts recently. That one you were talking about, with Graham. Oh my God! I just sounded like I was on speed.
Oh no, that was our DOD a couple of weeks ago.
Oh, that was just because you were on bloody whatever the opposite of speed is, right? You were on like you were just saying, "Oh, I'm all relaxed," and I'm like, "What?"
I was just really stoned that podcast or something.
I was going to say, I just so bit my tongue on saying that, right? And then I was like, okay, well, time to go.
Hey, thanks for dropping by. Hey, thanks for going in the office a bit earlier, so I didn't have to do this at 8 o'clock.
That's good.
Nice.
It's good.
I'm actually not incredibly exhausted. That's why we've been talking for 50 minutes. This is longest DOD ever, I think, so...
Is it? Well, if people don't like the DODs or they think it's gone on too long, just email us. If people did like the DODs, email us. If you just were curious as to what...
Both sides. Because quite frankly, we don't read the emails anyway. So I'm just going to... This is when I turn into an ass.
Yeah, this is when we give our secret tip bit. Too early to tip about next term. We have any other secrets we can allude to at the very end of the podcast to reward the people that managed to get to the very, very end?
That was it, that we actually don't listen to the emails. I'm kidding. So patently untrue, actually. People hopefully know us to know that I am jesting.
Sure, just, you know, dish our entire basis of being. Like, we build up all this community, and then in one go, you just fuck it off. I can't believe it. You did that.
You have
damage control.
2,600 and something or other posts to prove it, and I have.
Okay, just so we can be clear, 2,649, and it's about to be 2,650, as I post apologizing for you insulting everybody. Where do in the forums people post about the DODs, John?
The lounge.
In the lounge?
Yeah, in the lounge.
That would be the FXPHD lounge. Yes. Which, if you are not a paid member, you will not see, presumably, right?
Yes. That's okay, correct.
So if you are not a paid member, then just
post,
you know,
in the general in the forums that you can see.
Oh, there you go. Yes, cool. I see somebody's just posted that Nine Inch Nails giving away their album for free, but I shan't go down that rat hole.
No, actually, that's quite interesting, because do you know the theme to FX Guide TV is actually a Nine Inch Nails song. That because the way that they release their songs, that it's able to use their music if you remix it for various purposes. So actually, where you FX Guide TV is based on Nine Inch Nails song.
Uh-huh.
So see, it all kind of circles around.
Circles around. Everything revolves around us. All about me. Me.
2651.
Hey, I kind of go and interview someone from the orphanage about Iron Man. So, you know, feel free to just wind up and I'll say goodbye.
And yes, we'll see you guys in the forums. And thanks for listening to this extended edition of the FXPHDOD this week.
Thanks for listening. This podcast is copyright FXPHD.